Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. The podcast is distributed on these platforms every Friday and is included in the NAHU's weekly member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. We apologize for the audio quality on this week's episode of the Healthcare Happy Hour. We are practicing social distancing and recording in our individual homes.
As Congress continues deliberation on what should be included in the next large bipartisan coronavirus response package, we're looking at smaller bills, including one that deals with flexible spending accounts, extension and changes to the Paycheck Protection Program, and a renewed fight from the White House to ban surprise billing. On this week's episode of the Healthcare Happy Hour, Marcy, John, and Chris discuss these legislative developments. This week, a bill passed the Senate regarding an extension and changes to the Paycheck Protection Program loans. What is included in this bill relative to the one that passed the House last week, and how has NAHU been active in providing input on this program so far?
I think the major changes in the legislation that passed this week in the Senate, and looking at some of the pieces that we have been somewhat concerned about as we've been responding to emergency rules on the PPP loan program. And this bill now makes a few changes that I think will make it just a little bit easier for folks, not only who are still applying, there's still a little bit of money left, but also those that have already qualified when they get to the point where they're then trying to apply for the actual forgiveness of the loan. And so the changes here take that 75% requirement that the minimum portion of the PPP loan be spent on payroll, and it lowers it to 60%. So now 60% must be spent on payroll, and then the rest is open to be spent on rent, utilities, and other expenses. And this, I think, will help some of those folks where they're in areas where especially rent and utilities are very high. So for most part, when they're looking at their business expenses, their largest portion isn't payroll, and they have all of these other expenses that they're just kind of bleeding out on right now, especially for those folks that may not be in spaces that have landlords that are allowing for lapses in rent during this time. So this will allow some of those businesses to really be able to use some of these funds in places of high rent and adjust their portion to that requirement that at least 60% be spent on payroll. It also extends the amount of time that the loan can cover from 8 weeks to 24 weeks. And this is something that we have pointed out in some of our comment letters. And if you have questions of some of the things that we've put together, you can go to NAHU.org under advocacy policy documents and then comment letters. And you'll see that we've made a number of comments on the PPP regulations. And one of them was this concern that the 8 week time frame was just too short, especially when we think about the fact that the first loans were issued in April and looking forward to how long we were expecting not just to be under stay-at-home orders, but also for these phase-ins for reopening and how long it might take for some of these businesses to be able to come back. So we were happy to see that extension from the 8 to 24 weeks for the amount of time that the loan can cover. And then additionally, there was another extension included that allowed for the PPP loans to be paid back in 5 years as opposed to 2 years that was provided earlier. And again, here, I think it's looking to that longevity of trying to get businesses back and running, and having that 2 year time frame might be a little too short for some who are going to have a little bit of a longer rebuilding period. So that 5 years provides a little bit more relief for some of the businesses that have qualified and have already received some of these funds, and then those that are looking into trying to qualify for a new loan moving forward.
Yeah, I think this bill was important to be now. It's important to note this is not the next big COVID package. However, this piece of legislation, as Marcy pointed out, the weeks were coming to an end of the time period that people would have to spend for these loans. So this is a very bipartisan piece that passed the House last week, the Senate this week, and is expected to be signed by President Trump. All sides have heard about the complaints from business owners about the attempt to use this program. So this should give them the flexibility that they're looking for.
Aside from this legislation dealing with PPP loans, do we expect another major bipartisan legislative package akin to the FFCRA and CARES Act? After the House passed the HEROES Act 3 weeks ago, what are the barriers to Congress moving forward with a package at this time? And what are we anticipating may be included?
We are expecting another bill, but perhaps not on a $3 trillion level. And so because it's anticipated that this will be the last one, it could be quite a food fight in terms of trying to get what everybody wants to include. It'll likely be more narrowly focused. Republicans want some liability protections, and there's an appetite by both sides of the aisle, Democrats in particular, to provide some state and local funding aid. States' revenues are plummeting. And then, of course, we're working on a number of healthcare issues. We think it was right in the first CARES Act to focus on providers and COVID itself and protective gear and hospital assistance. But I think now is the time to turn to some coverage issues as we see the number of people unemployed as of this week hovering above 42 million. Many of those people had employer coverage. So as we are in many employer coalitions, it's the way to raise your voice more effectively. Hill staffers are more interested in hearing from us. And one of the topics we are talking about is COBRA as a bridge to bring people back to work who have already paid part or all of their deductible. And rather than having them out on the individual market and then bringing them back in and starting over with their deductibles, it's a way to bridge them and support the employer-based system. So it would be a time-limited bridge where an employee is recalled, the program then ends and they're back in their employer coverage as whatever their status was at the time that they were furloughed. This is getting traction. I'm on a lot of calls with Republicans who are saying they're hearing a lot about this. There's a great deal of interest in it. They see this as less expensive option to public program expansions, as well as efficient in that COBRA already exists. Now, we've stressed the need for simplicity and for the highest level of subsidy possible to keep administration simple, because we know how administratively complex this is for employers. It's also a good talking point with Republicans, because if we don't do something to support private coverage, then the alternative is public programs. And once you do that, it's hard to unwind those. And if we can't support private coverage, even in a time of crisis, then public programs will be the only alternative. So I think this has a good chance of being in the next package, but we have no idea what any of the details will be. And of course, we'll be talking to them about particulars as we move along. But right now, it's just a matter of getting them to buy into the idea so that it becomes part of the overall plan.
A bill dropped in the House this week in regard to FSAs, the Family Savings Flexibility Act, which has garnered bipartisan support. What exactly is in this bill, and what does NAHU support?
So I talked about coalitions and the effectiveness of coalitions, and this is a prime example of our discussions with staff regarding the issue of FSAs and the dependent care FSAs and the difficulties in, even with the IRS flexibility on FSAs, did not provide any flexibility on the dependent side. And so this bill does essentially two things. Number one, it raises the thresholds for dependent care to $10,000. It also expands the limits on FSAs, and it extends the period of time that you have to roll over into 2021. We're still waiting on the specific language, and we will be offering a letter of support. I'll also say that this bill is bipartisan, which is an excellent sign and opportunity for including in the next larger bill. what I'm hearing is that there is support on both sides of the aisle. Chris, do you agree with that?
Yeah, this piece of legislation was included in the HEROES Act, and now it has broke out on its own. I think the advantage to that is this allows Republicans also to be very engaged, where only one Republican voted for the HEROES Act. The most important thing, obviously, is the fact that people can't use their FSAs this year while they're stuck at home. Maybe they use their FSAs for childcare or other healthcare expenses that weren't being covered. And this year, obviously, you can't use that when childcare is closed and you can't get to various doctors or eye doctors or other components that people use for their FSAs. So allowing this to go into next year is particularly necessary. While some of this has been addressed on the regulatory side, what they really were able to do is too small and insufficient for what we need to be able to do. And so it's really going to take legislation to really protect people for their FSAs. So we are hopeful that this is a sort of provision, since it is bipartisan, as John points out, can be successfully included in the final package that meets President Trump's desk.
And just to emphasize exactly how many people this could affect and why this is so important when we're looking at all of the other pieces that we're in the HEROES Act and how this has been teased out. About 45% of American workers have access to an FSA, and about 42% have access to a dependent care FSA. So that's a large portion of working Americans. And what we saw earlier this year, the IRS tried to assist a bit in relief for folks who, as Chris pointed out, aren't able to spend some of their FSA dollars with elective procedures right now. And the IRS released their guidance allowing an increase of 20% from $500 to $550 for the rollover for this year. That extra $50 just wasn't quite what we had in mind. So with this, with the Family Savings Flexibility Act, this would allow FSA or those dependent FSA holders to roll over any unspent amounts from the 2020 plan year to the 2021 plan year. And it's important to point out plan years here because we know many FSA accounts do not go on a calendar year. So with this legislation and our ask to Congress and the administration, it was really important not to just tack on an extra 6 months at the end of the pandemic or the end of the calendar year. We wanted to make sure that these non-calendar year plans would also be able to take advantage of any extensions. And so this goes on the plan year cycle and also increases the maximum HSA contribution from $3,500 for individual coverage and $7,000 for family coverage to $6,900 for individual coverage and $13,800 for family coverage. So a lot of big asks that we have had, not just on behalf of NEHU, but also, as John pointed out, many of our coalitions have been answered in this legislation, and we look forward to working on some bipartisan relief through the Family Savings Flexibility Act.
And I know you all want to know, when will this next bill happen? We don't know. But I think it's a fair guess that by the 4th of July break, they will have done something, or else the chances diminished quickly as we head towards the August recess and then the fall campaign.
Yeah, I think some sort of legislation, including FSAs, will pass. I think something around the liability issue will pass. And so we'll keep an eye, particularly on our healthcare initiatives, and really make sure that those make it into the final package.
Late last week, amidst the pandemic, White House officials renewed their push to ban surprise billing, floating a plan that NEHU has some concerns about. Can you speak about that?
Well, essentially what it does is it holds harmless consumers for surprise billing. And while that's a good thing, it diminishes the impetus that Congress has to act on actually solving the surprise billing issue. It would leave it up to courts and judges who have no healthcare experience to determine payment disputes. It then will make it difficult to set premium levels. Carriers will have to account for that uncertainty. Self-insured plans and ERISA plans will just be in the same state of uncertainty. And in many ways, it creates more problems than it solves.
I think I particularly would be concerned for businesses that self-insure, because if you don't put a system in place about what payments would be made for out-of-network hospital and other treatments, it's really going to be left up to the court system. And, you know, with a fully insured product, you at least have the legal team of an insurance carrier to fight about these things. But for those of us in the self-insurance universe, you're really asking that business owner to now represent themselves in each case that something's going on out of network. And we worry that that really adds considerable cost onto an employer who chooses to self-insure. Self-insurance has been of great value for many of employers, and to be quite honest, has made healthcare more affordable for many employers compared to a fully insured plan. So we're concerned about anything that's going to add to the legal costs of operating a self-insurance plan. And so while these conversations continue, we will be engaged, particularly making sure that all segments of the insurance market are protected, the fully insured, the self-insured, and that we're able to protect the consumer and protect overall healthcare costs.
Yeah, I'm less optimistic about solving surprise billing, even in this next package, than I am about the FSAs and the COBRA issue. I think this one is still very, very full of landmines and going to be tricky to negotiate.
I also would just caution about the way that the White House is approaching this and the kind of blanket statement of just banning surprise billing and then the rabbit hole that we fall down with all of the litigation that John and Chris mentioned. And as someone who goes through the 300 and 1800 page regulations, having some simple statements seems like something that would be welcome and not as complicated. But I think some of these simple statements of banning surprise billing actually leads to even more unintended outcomes and more complications. So as much as we, you know, sometimes don't really look forward to sitting down and reading through pages and pages of regulations and new pieces of legislation, this is one area that we really need to make sure we have strict parameters on and that we're not opening up to ending up just going through continuous litigation without having clear ends and limits in place so that we're not back in this place again in a couple of years trying to solve this issue.
It is now time for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour Toast of the Week. Marcy, what are we toasting to this week?
This week, we are toasting to peace and healing across our country and the hope for liberty and justice for all.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit nahu.org.